Fellow Yinzers, welcome to episode 18 of Yinz Are Good, the podcast that shares your stories of times when someone made your life better. And we celebrate the good people doing the good stuff for our neighbors right here in the Berg. I am your host, Tressa Glover. How are you all doing? Okay, I'll wait for you all to respond. Go on. No, I realize, of course, I cannot hear you, but I am thinking about you, about our Yinz Are Good community, and I'm hoping that you are staying connected and moving forward and getting some vaccines, I hope, so we can connect even more in the coming months. Speaking of, keep an eye out in the coming months, and get ready to mark your calendars. I have no dates for you, of course, just get ready to mark your calendars, because you will be finding us again in some public spaces throughout the city. We did this a couple times last year, and now as the weather is getting nicer, we are prepared to do it again, and we will be there with our big Yinz Are Good banner, so be hard to miss, but this is a chance for us to meet you. And a chance for you to share a story with us. We can record it right there on site. You can write it down and hand it over to us if you prefer that. So just wanted to prep you, so whatever way you feel like you need to prepare for such an event. But that will be coming up soon, and I wanted to let you know. And speaking of, how many times am I going to say speaking of? I don't know. Speaking of stories, you know what I'm going to say. Please send us some. Just tell us about a time when someone made your life better, whatever that means to you. And it can be a stranger. You may remember from our last episode, the gentleman that I mentioned. And also a reminder, too, that if you are more comfortable remaining anonymous, you absolutely can. You can just leave us that voicemail at 1-833-399-GOOD. You don't have to identify yourself at all. Or send us an email, yinzaregood, yinzaregood, at gmail.com. It's as simple as that. It's whatever making your life better means to you. It can be making your day better, right? Someone who made you laugh at a time when you really thought you couldn't. And I was going to say, speaking of, well, why not? Speaking of that, what is coming up today? Well, we have some of your fill-in-the-blank replies to the prompt. Whenever I need a good laugh, I think about the time when blank. And a reminder that you'll find these prompts on our Facebook page. And follow us on Instagram. You'll find them there, too. And if this is your first time listening to Yinz Are Good, first of all, welcome. And I'm so glad that you have found us. And yes, so in addition to you sharing your stories with us, I also will put prompts out on our social media and in the form of these fill-in-the-blanks. And you can comment under the prompts, or you can send us an email, or leave us a voicemail for whatever, however you want to fill in that blank. Also coming up today in our Yinzer Spotlights, and I realize I have not framed it as the Yinzer Spotlight for a few episodes, but yes, it is, and I will get back on that in our Yinzer Spotlight. We have a wonderful interview with Tiffany Huff Struthers, who is the founder and CEO of When She Thrives. Now, When She Thrives is an incredible organization who is, quote, dedicated to equipping single mothers to move their families from poverty to prosperity through advocacy, education, personal and professional development. Tiffany is inspirational, in one word. This conversation we had, I cannot wait to share it with you. The work that Tiffany and her organization are doing is important and necessary and wonderful, and they have such great events coming up. So, cannot wait to share that with you. And name that neighborhood. I mean, of course, goes without saying. That's coming up. And Don DeJulio is coming back, which reminds me, any of you, if you've been thinking about it and you want to be a guest on Name That Neighborhood, do it. Send me an email. And if this is your first time listening, Name That Neighborhood is our Pittsburgh fun fact quiz segment. I'm going to come up with a better descriptor. Those were many words. But it involves neighborhoods that are somehow highlighted throughout the episode. And I create statements of fact, and you have to guess which neighborhood I'm talking about, meaning you name that neighborhood. You're right. I am. I'm clever. I know it. So that is coming up as well. And I think that is just about it for now. I do want to thank you so much for listening, for tuning in to this episode 18, whether you've listened to them all, whether it's your first time or your seventh. Thank you. Thank you for finding us. Thank you for being part of this community. I know I am so grateful for it. All right, then, without further ado, let's get to the good stuff. All right, here we have it. Our fill in the blanks for, as a reminder, whenever I need a good laugh, I think about the time when. Taylor says, when I dropped an AC unit out the window and then tried to catch it by grabbing the cord. I'm laughing with you, Taylor. With you. Not at you. Oh my gosh. I bet there are others among us who have done the same thing. It's instinct. No. Taylor, thank you so much for sharing. And Sandy shares, whenever I need a good laugh, I think about the time when I wore a hanging price tag on my dress at my son's wedding. Oh, no. Oh, Sandy, again, with you, not at you. Oh, gosh. You know, I feel like that's an easy thing to have happen. It's unfortunate it happened on a day when there were probably more pictures taken of you than have been taken ever or in a long time, maybe, since your wedding. I'm curious if there was a lot of airbrushing involved regarding the tag. Perhaps it was behind you, you know, on your back. So maybe that, at least, the photos. Although, I don't know. You might want to capture that for the memory of that incident. Oh, boy. And so those are our two, and thank you, because they both made me laugh. So thank you for your stories of things you've done that have made me laugh. No, thank you for sharing them. Taylor and Sandy, yins are good. Hello, Tiffany.
Yes. Hi, Tessa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, welcome. I'm truly honored to have you on the show. Thank you. If you'd like to, maybe just to start off for us, could you please just tell us a little bit about you and how When She Thrives came to be?
Okay, so I will give you the abbreviated version of a very long story. I was the one in my family who was going to be the one to quote unquote make it. I'm doing air quotes, but of course you can't see me. I was the youngest of three children, and I grew up in the perfect American family until we weren't. And my family became the family that was like the poster child of every epidemic to hit the Black community. My parents got divorced. My mom had mental health issues. My sister was a teen mom. My brother was like in trouble and in gangs. And then there was me. And I was smart. And everybody always said, you know, if you make good grades, you'll get a scholarship, you'll go to college, you'll get a good job. All of those things were true for me. The one thing, though, that nobody really taught me about, or the one thing that I wasn't looking to avoid, was what happened to me, and that was that I became a single mom. Even though I'd quote unquote done everything right, that was my one infraction. And so I felt like, as hard as I worked to not become a statistic, by society's definition, I had become a statistic. And what I recognized, though, was that because of the resources that I had, and by resources, I mean the education, support system, and also financial resources at certain points of the journey, I was at an advantage from other single moms. And I also recognized that because of the nature of our communities and the way that, or the number of households that were being led by single moms, that if somebody could help single moms understand their power, then they would be able to potentially shift the trajectory of, because they're leading the households, which means they have the power to impact the children. And of course, if women set the standards for men, either they meet the standards or they all end up single, right? So I got this grand vision. I knew that somebody needed to do it. I didn't know I was going to be the one to attempt to undertake this thing. But in my journey, at the end of the relationship that ultimately led to me being a single mom, it ended literally with a bang. I ended up living in a domestic violence shelter after being shot by the father of my children. And part of the recovery of my life led me to take what I now refer to as a sabbatical for 2 years in North Carolina. And while I was there, rediscovering myself and building a solid foundation for my two sons, who at the time were very young. One of them was just one, and the other was about a little more than two. While I was there, one night I got a what I like to call a divine download, and I literally wrote this plan for this amazing program to help single moms in all of these facets of their lives. That was in 2007, 2008. And then I came back to Pittsburgh in 2009, and I didn't really start doing the work until 2010. And that work started with me really being solutions-based, Tressa. So I had a group of friends, many of whom were single moms, and we all found ourselves, unfortunately, overweight. And we either could not afford to, some of us couldn't afford to go to Weight Watchers, and some of us didn't have childcare to go to Weight Watchers. So I decided to create a space where we could get what we needed without going to Weight Watchers. And so I created this group. It was called Empower. It's a really long acronym. I'll spare you the details. But ultimately, collectively, over about 6 months, we lost about 300 pounds. And so that was kind of
Wow.
the beginning of When She Thrives. And of course, life was happening, and I really didn't know the ins of out and outs of starting an organization. And so over the next several years, I was taking classes at the Carnegie Library, and I was doing, workshops and teaching and all of these things. And then finally, I got it together, and the rest is history, I guess. That was a really long answer, but hopefully it helped. Of course, along the way, I went to college and all of those fun things. But yeah, that's kind of the abbreviated version.
You are truly inspiring.
Thank you.
You are separate from now, the work that you're doing, but just you yourself, you really are.
I appreciate that so much.
Well, I mean, it's and the way that you're choosing to take what you've learned and what you've been through and how you've gotten through, the fact that you're thinking, how can I help others that might be in the same situation? And, how can we connect and how can I help? And so it's so appreciated.
Thank you. I just appreciate the opportunity to share.
And now also, if I know if you want to talk a little bit more, because again, you've done so many things, but I know you've also published two books. Yes.
Yes. So one of our programs now is that we work with small cohorts of single moms, and we help them to understand, first and foremost, the power of their story. And then we help them to write and get edited and self-publish their stories, and they learn about entrepreneurship, and it's an opportunity for them to create an additional stream of income to support themselves and their family. So that's what I'm really proud of, probably more proud of than the fact that I wrote two books myself. But yes, I did write two books. One is called 30 Day Stay, and it's actually the story of my experience in that domestic violence shelter, as well as the journey that led me there. And the other book is a 31 day devotional for women. So I'm really committed, Tressa, through my life, hopefully, that, my story and my experiences are all going to be used in a way that will empower others to both make impact and an income. And of course, that looks different for everybody. But one of the things that I try and help people to understand is that your story being told isn't limited to the pages of a book. Like I just shared, When She Thrives was birthed out of my story. It is a part of me telling my story. I have a podcast. It's a way to tell my story. So regardless of what your experience is or what you've grown through, you have something to share. And if you're willing to share it, then you can absolutely make an impact. And if it's what you want to do, you could potentially make an income as well.
Speaking of that, you just mentioning one of the programs. I know you have several going on there at When She Thrives.
Yes.
You want to tell us about some others?
Yes. So the one I just told you about, it's actually called The Scenes from a Single Mom Book Project. So the books are all called Scenes from a Single Mom. And we are actually working to publish volume four this summer. So volume one is Scenes from a Single Mom. And the theme is Truth, Trials, and Triumph. Volume two is Love, Loss, and Legacy. Volume three is Peace, Purpose, Power. And volume four is Wisdom, Willpower, and Wealth. So, we will also be expanding the program this year to include a podcast. So we're really excited about that. Our second program, which is probably the most prevalent right now because of the pandemic and all of the things that have come with it, is called Growing Through Grants. And so Growing Through Grants are rapid response crisis prevention grants, and they are purposed to prevent homelessness, hunger, unemployment, or the interruption of any basic need. And so what separates our grant program from others is one, that it's rapid response. So we try and get a response to every applicant within 48 hours, and our goal is to have funds dispersed, or supplies if it's a need, like for food or household items, things like that. We want to get the need met within 2 weeks. But most often we can turn it around in about 72 hours, depending upon what the request is or what the need is. And why this program is so important, Tressa, is because a lot of times the programs that are available to support you require, one, that you're already in crisis, and two, require that while you're in the midst of said crisis, you produce an insane amount of documentation and proof of said crisis. So we really work hard to streamline the process for the application, and also to have, like I said, a rapid turnaround to prevent the crisis, as opposed to waiting for moms and their families to be in crisis. And then our third program is called SOAR, and it is an acronym for Successfully Overcoming Adversity with Resilience. And through SOAR, we are really working with moms to understand the intersection between self-care and social justice, and really learning about how to advocate for yourself as a woman individually, how to advocate for yourself and your children, whether that be at a school board meeting or at the neighborhood council. And then also learning how to advocate for a cause or the causes that you feel strongly about, but advocating in those ways number one, with the education, right? But number two, understanding that you can't sacrifice yourself in the midst. So really understanding the importance of taking care of yourself and staying true to your morals as you move through that process. Both SOAR and Scenes from a Single Mom are cohort style programs. The book project is nearly a year-long project, but the SOAR cohorts are a little shorter, so they run spring and fall.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. If any of our listeners are thinking, they'd be interested in participating, or at least to find out more about it, where can they? How can they find out the info?
I would definitely encourage your listeners to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram at When She Thrives. We also actually have very recently started a text service where you can actually get texts of updates about what is going on, what's new, and our next cohort of SOAR will actually kick off in the fall. And the same will be the case for the book project. So the book will be published in August, and we have a very big book launch for the authors. And it's usually at the book launch that the recruitment for the next cohort of the book project kicks off because there are people there and they're like, wow, this is amazing. How do I become a part of this? We do information sessions for both programs during the month of September, and then we provide all of the details on how to get involved. Okay, so here is the phone number. It's
Okay.
area code 833-530-1162, and you want to text FOMO, which is an acronym for fear of missing out. So it's FOMO.
And okay, so and also, I think you have some other events perhaps coming up.
Yes, we do. So one of the other
Yes.
things that we do is we do quarterly self-care Saturday events. And these events right now are virtual, but we do them quarterly and they're all about, you guessed it, self-care. The beautiful thing is that we deliver your self-care box to you so that you can participate with us. So basically, we provide spa treatments, and then each quarter there's a theme for the Self-Care Saturday. So for May, which is our upcoming one, and tickets are available right now, our theme is Big Hat Ladies Tea. So everybody is expected to wear a hat and look pretty, and we will deliver to you all of the things you need to participate in the tea. It will be inclusive of instructions. There's always sweet treats that we provide. For our last self-care Saturday, it was Galentine's Day. So we had chocolate covered strawberries and chocolate covered pretzels and chocolate covered Oreos. And you'll get an instruction
Oh.
manual. We did a sip and paint last time. We had a makeup tutorial last time. But this time is a little different because it is a tea party. We're encouraging our guests to invite a friend or two to actually have a tea party with them and join us on Zoom. So we'll be providing your pretty place setting and you'll get some really fancy sweet treats to enjoy. And we have some really great things in store for the tea party. We're going to do a tea tasting. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. And
What a great
it breaks
idea.
the
I love
monotony
it.
of the pandemic, of course. And it is also caring for yourself, but it's for two good causes. One, for your own health and wellness, and two, for the health and wellness of the moms and families that we support through our programming. So
Where can our listeners find out more and get tickets and
they can find out
all that?
more and get tickets at www.whenshethrives.org/events. And again, if you're following us on Facebook and Instagram, the information is available there as well. We would love to have you join us.
So what about as far as our listeners who do want to help in some way, in addition to, getting tickets for this upcoming event, but if they want to help, volunteer, or, what's the best way to
So
to
on
do
our
that.
website, we have also a page where you can go to our website, whenshethrives.org, and there's a button you can click to get involved. So we are always looking for volunteers. For example, like I said, for Self Care Saturday, we actually hand deliver the packages if they're in the greater Pittsburgh area. So we deliver a lot of packages. So if you're someone who enjoys driving and this is contactless delivery, we would definitely appreciate your support with that. We are actively right now recruiting board members. Specifically, we need a new board secretary, and we also are looking for someone who has legal experience, an attorney or a paralegal, someone who has that knowledge. So that's always the case. And then with our Scenes from a Single Mom book project, because it is an entrepreneurial program and we provide them with that entrepreneurial training, we're always looking for people who are subject matter experts on things from you from running the gamut from attorneys who can speak to like business formation to someone who can speak about marketing, how to prepare for filing your taxes, someone who could speak about investing, you name it. So if you have an area of expertise and you want to use it to make an impact, we'd love to connect with you as well. And all of that information is on that get link or get involved page.
Perfect. Can only imagine the countless people that you've helped already and been able to
Yes,
connect
and
with.
it's growing. One of the things that we did during the holiday is we provided groceries for holiday meals. And for Christmas, we actually did a pajama drive because what we know to be true is that a lot of moms are so focused on getting the need that come Christmas, they really don't have anything for themselves. And one of the last things that they're able to buy for themselves is comfortable, warm pajamas. So this year, with our dinner drive for Christmas, we did a pajama drive, and every family who got a meal, the moms got gift wrapped pajamas. And it was something so small, but it made such a huge difference. We got so much feedback from even moms talking about how happy their children were that they had a gift and that they were, there while they opened it. So, yeah, there's definitely a myriad of ways to be involved and make an impact. And sometimes it's the things that we think are so unimportant that are very important to others.
Oh, sure, the little things. And you're so right. You know how selfless moms
Yes.
are, right? Putting their children first. And well, it's so thoughtful.
Yes.
And pajamas at Christmas is like the
Oh
best.
my
Getting new
gosh.
PJs, right?
I mean,
That's always the
it's
best.
April 1st, but there's a snowstorm. So, like, those cozy pajamas are kind of important today, too.
I actually put on my winter socks today. I was like, oh, I thought these were
Yes.
retired for the season, but nope, I got them on.
Not quite yet.
What is your favorite part about all of this work that you're doing? Is it, if it's possible to answer that?
Honestly, Tressa, this question has a bittersweet answer. And I'll tell you why it's bittersweet before I tell you the answer. So because of the way that I started the organization, I was very hands-on and I've literally just figured out, I don't even know how, I just did it, you know? So I've been doing everything. But because we are growing, and obviously if we want to impact more people, I can no longer do everything. And that means that I have to choose a side. Am I going to be making sure that we have the fuel to ensure that the organization continues to run and grow? Or am I going to be, on the streets working with our people? And that is what brings me joy. That is what makes me happy when a mom tells me thank you, when a mom says, because of you, or because of your organization, it just warms my heart. But now I know that because I have the vision and I know not everything, but I know where the organization needs to go. I have to be sure that I am steering the vision. So I'm going to have to entrust a lot of that hands-on work to other people who can be equally as impactful. And it's bittersweet, because I enjoy that. So yeah, that's my favorite part. It's like the idea of getting an email or a text message or someone stopping me on the street and saying, "Are you Tiffany? Can I give you a hug?" And I'm like, well, I guess so, maybe, but it's always nice for you to know that, like, in all that you do, when you're having a bad day, when things don't go the way you planned it, there's that one person who you've made a difference for. And it makes a world of difference.
It does. I am so grateful that we got to talk today
Likewise,
and
now you
that,
made me cry.
oh my, I know, I'm gonna start. I'm starting to cry. I'm gonna be crying as we close this out. I am. I'm just so grateful and grateful that I can share it with, you and everything that you're doing with our listeners. And just thank you.
Thank you.
And
Never take lightly when someone is willing to share their space and their platform. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share. Thank you so much, Tressa.
well, hello there, Don.
Hi there, Tressa.
How are you today?
Oh, just peachy. How are you?
I am good. Welcome back to Name That Neighborhood.
It is so good to be back here.
I know it is for you. I know it is. I know the listeners are happy to have you yet again. Well, this, oh, and I did want to say for any of you who may be listening for the first time, Don is also my husband. So I think maybe sometimes that helps just having a little context there. And you've done quite a few of these, and you're back. Would you like to know the two neighborhoods from which you are choosing?
I would love to.
Love it. You are choosing from Denora and Coriopolis. What? It is true. And you know how this goes, of course.
I do.
And actually, this time I have five questions slash statements for you. All
All right.
right. Should we just get into it?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Number one. In 1900, the Union Steel Company broke ground for the construction of the wire mill in this neighborhood.
Denora.
Whoa, you were on it. That is correct. You're starting out strong.
I felt pretty confident about that one. You might re recall our mutual friend Jim McManus, the accomplished playwright.
I do, I do.
He's from Denora, and a lot of his works contained references to steel mills and mills in the area, so thought I'd take an educated guess.
Look at you. And a shout out to Jim McManus, by the way. Well done. Should we talk about it a little bit?
For a really long time.
Really long time. So, okay, basically what was happening in 1899. Richard B. Mellon, you might be familiar with that last, purchased about 380 acres of land for the Union Improvement Company. At the same time, William H. Donner and the Mellon interests were organizing the Union Steel Company. You know you're a big deal when it can just be written as the Mellon interests, because there are just so many. So anyway, the Union Improvement.
Would that mean that he's kind of a melon baller?
Okay, that was good. I will give you that one. Yes, I think that's what that would mean. So the Union Improvement Company allocated all of that land that was lying between the Pittsburgh, Virginia, and Charleston Railroad and the Monongahela River. They allocated that to industry, and then all the land lying west of the railroad was for a town site. That's how that worked. So, yes, 1900, breaking ground for the mill. So, the original wire mill consisted of two rod mills, a wire drawing department, wire nail department, wire galvanizing department, and varnished wire and barbed wire departments. The capacity of the two rod mills at that time was 1,200 tons in 24 hours.
That seems like a lot.
I think that does seem like a lot. It must be. So while this was going on, we had the Matthew Woven Wire Fence Company, and it was constructing a plant for the manufacture of woven wire fencing, as you might think. And this plant formed the nucleus of the woven wire fence and welded wire fabric departments. The plant was operated by the Union Steel Company until 1903. That's when the American Steel and Wire Company, a subsidiary of the U.S. Steel Corporation, leased the property from the Union Steel Company. That's a lot of companies.
Well, and that's a lot of W's in the name. Woven wire, welded wire, wacky wire.
It is a lot of W's and just a lot of name. So hopefully that was, just listening, easy to follow. But because I know I was getting confused even. But that's what was happening. And you, my friend, are one for one.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Let's keep this party going.
Sure.
Number two. This neighborhood's train station was constructed in the 1890s as part of an expansion of the Pittsburgh and Lake Erie Railroad's commuter line.
Let's go Coriopolis.
John, another one correct. This is crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah, so the Coriopolis...
Forget what that's like, getting two in a row.
I know you do. Oh, I'm sorry. So, the Coriopolis train station was built between 1894 and 1896 by the Pittsburgh and Lake Erie Railroad. And it was designed in the Richardsonian Romanesque style. Now, I had never heard of that. Had you?
No, ma'am.
Well, then here we go. Let's learn a little bit here. Romanesque Revival architecture is what we're talking about. And so this particular kind, Richardsonian Romanesque, was named after architect Henry Hobson Richardson. See, there you have it. It was inspired by the Romans of the 11th and 12th centuries. It does also incorporate French and Spanish Romanesque characteristics of the same period. And the structures were always built of solid masonry stonework. So stone was the preferred material, although sometimes they did often mix it with brick. So this train station, the Coriopolis train station, was added to the National Register of Historic Places on April 20th, 1979. And it's been vacant since the late 1970s, but there is a project currently underway to revitalize this historic landmark. How cool is that? And so you are cool. Two for two. This is craziness. Let's keep rolling, shall we?
Sure. Like a train.
Number three. Baseball legend and Hall of Famer Stan the Man Musial was born in this neighborhood in 1920.
I think Denora.
You'd be thinking correctly. I can't even believe it. It is true. So Stan, okay, now I always do it. It's Musial, right? Why do I think Musial?
It's Musial.
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 Musial. So yeah, he did begin, now, I don't know if you knew this, but he began his professional baseball career as a left-handed pitcher in 1938 after signing with the Cardinals. But while playing the outfield due to a shortage of players, he permanently damaged his left shoulder while diving for a ball. And so his manager then suggested, hey, why don't you just focus on hitting? Well, then, the rest, as they say, is history. He won 7 National League batting titles. He was MVP of the league 3 times. He played in 24 All-Star games, had a lifetime batting average of .331. Oh, and was part of 3 World Series championship teams. You know.
Like you do. Yeah,
like you do.
Accomplish much.
No, he tried, though. That's all we ask. And he was the son of a Polish immigrant, Lucas Musial, and his wife, Mary, and they lived halfway up the hill on 6th Street. And he actually got involved in sports at the local Polish Falcons Nest 247. And this is actually where his athletic foundation was set. At Denora High School, he excelled in both basketball and baseball. And when it came time for him to choose between the two, he went against his father's wishes. What? Although he did have the encouragement of his mother, he chose his first love, baseball.
Aw,
Stan.
Yeah. So it's funny, and if this comes up in a later question, feel free to tell me to stop. But
when you
were saying a baseball great from Denora, before mm-hmm. you said Stan Musial, I was going to say Ken Griffey Jr. Because I believe Denora, all you Yinz are good fact checkers out there, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe he was from Denora, PA, Mr. Ken Griffey Jr.
Look at you. That now sounds familiar now that you're saying that. Mm-hmm. Look at you. Okay, fact checkers. I'll get mine right on it.
Sure.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, you might be right.
Fun fact from this side of the line.
Look at that. Thanks, Don.
Sure.
I love it. And now it's like I want to Google it right now, but I will wait.
Yeah.
To keep this, again, well, now it's a party train. It was a party and a train. Now it's a party train.
Full steam ahead.
Oh, my Lord. Number four. Before being incorporated under its current name in 1886, this neighborhood had previously been known as Fort Vance.
Let's go with Coriopolis.
Who are you? This is like the old days. Another right answer.
Woohoo.
It is indeed Coriopolis. So, okay, Fort Vance. This was named after Joseph Vance, who was a 24-year-old Virginian when he made his way to the area in 1774. He first erected a blockhouse there, and then, at his father's urging, he erected a small fort surrounding it for protection. And this fort was one of the strongest on the Western frontier, because, of course, right, that we were the Western frontier at that point, made up of several cabins and blockhouses, all surrounded by a stockade made of oak.
Hmm.
How about it?
How about it?
Joseph Vance.
Yeah. Built himself a fort.
I know.
Yeah.
Love it.
I built a pillow fort once, I guess.
Oh, pillow forts. Oh, what about a snow fort? I think you and I talked about this before. When you had the plastic.
Sure, never had a snow fort.
Oh, like your own little igloo. Oh, they were great. pillow or snow? Well, maybe that's a question we'll put to our listeners sometime. Which one do you prefer? Pillow fort or snow fort? Interesting. Don, I don't even know what to do. There's one more question, and
that's not jinxed. Okay.
Well, okay, we're not going to talk about it. Number five. In this neighborhood in 1916, work began on the development known as Cement City, which planned for more than 100 duplexes and houses.
I'm going to go with Denora.
I hear birds singing, and I wish I'm throwing confetti in my mind for you.
Fireworks?
Yes, lots of fireworks. Five for five. You are so correct, Denora. Yeah, so, okay, in the early part of the 20th century, we've already talked about the steel mills, right? But, of course, they were being built at a very, you know, rapid pace in Denora. And they actually anticipated that the mills were going to expand even more. And there were a series of coke ovens that were going to be constructed. So they're thinking that the number of employees would climb from around 6,000 or 7,000 to up to 25,000. Where are these people going to live, right?
Right.
So the American Steel and Wire Company, who we talked about before, announced plans to build 152 units or 120 houses. So whatever, or in some of those would be duplexes, on several tracts of land. And their interests at that time were in both steel reinforcement and concrete. So this innovative method of building houses out of concrete seemed to make sense. And I say innovative. Now, built using concrete had been in existence for centuries, but there was this invention of Portland cement that apparently was this very desirable building material with superior strength and durability. And they were like, let's do it. So they did. And so the architectural design of Cement City included low-pitched hipped roofs and wide overhanging eaves, simple detailing, smooth planes. And they were built according to 8 different house plans. So either 4, 5, or 6-room units. Each poured concrete house had a raised basement, 2 full stories. The houses were finished in stucco. They also contained waste and storm sewers. And the sidewalks and streets were paved and lined with sycamore trees.
Aww.
Oh, and the company maintained flower gardens, tennis courts, playgrounds. The rooms of each house were wallpapered every 3 years. The interior trim was painted every 4 years. And the company provided grass seed and maintained fencing.
Wow.
Right?
Was it woven wire fencing?
Oh, you know it. Is there any other kind? Cement City is actually a successful example of a project undertaken by a big company that provided its workers with affordable, sanitary, and fireproof housing.
Hmm.
And this is way back.
Way back.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Don, what would you like to do to celebrate your 5 for 5 showing?
Well, let's not make this about me, Tress. I think the real winner today is alliteration. We had woven wire. We had Richardsonian Romanesque. We have now finished the Cement City.
Thank you, as always. It's great to have you back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to do it for us here. Episode 18 of Yins Are Good. Again, a big thank you to Tiffany from When She Thrives. Thank you so much for the wonderful conversation. And listeners, please do check them out at whenshethrives.org. And there's more info in our show notes. And thank you all for tuning in, for listening. I'm so grateful to have you all join me. And please do send us your stories. We want to hear them. We want to share them. 1-833-399-GOOD or yinsaregood@gmail.com. And so until next time, my friends, be safe, be kind, be good. Thank yous going out to Tiffany Huff Struthers, Don DiGiulio, and as always, for our most fabulous artwork, Mike Rubino.